Do you ever feel stuck? Like you want to change, but you're unsure how? Or do you sense that you're slowly becoming irrelevant? You see the world changing at a record pace and feel like you're being left behind? If these thoughts have ever popped into your head, you're not alone. The good news is that irrelevance is a choice. And today, we're going to learn the secrets to staying relevant in an ever-changing world. Welcome to the Readout Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Walchens. For the past 10 years, I've been helping young leaders reach their potential. At Readout, our belief is that to lead out, you have to read out. And to read out means to read well and to read broadly. Almost every great leader in history has been a reader. And we wholeheartedly agree with Margaret Fuller when she said, "Today a reader, tomorrow a leader." Reading is not optional to leadership. It's not the side dish. It's the main course. And in order to become a great leader, you have to dig in. But here's the problem. We here at Readout know that in this day and age, time and energy is hard to come by. My hope is to save you that time and energy and bring you the best books that can have an impact in your life right now. Then I want to teach you to get the most out of these books so that you can become the leader you've always dreamed of being faster than you ever imagined. Our dream is to create a movement of young adults passionate about reading and dangerously effective at leading. Thank you to everybody sharing us on social media or anywhere else you're sharing us. We really appreciate it. We really appreciate the reviews you guys are leaving us. That's helping us build this movement. And I appreciate that you would take the time, your precious time, to do that. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We need your help building the movement. And it really means a lot to me. Welcome to our final episode in our series called Your Next Chapter. In this series, we'll take one of our recommended books and then read and analyze one of its best chapters. From start to finish, we'll have you pumping literary iron on the best content from the best books. Think of it as a crash course for instant application or a mini audiobook where you get to skip the fluff. At Readout, we don't just read books, we apply them and we master them. So here's to today's chapter. I hope you enjoy it. Today's chapter comes from Didn't See It Coming by Carrie Newhoff. If you want to check out our episode about the book, go back to the book that predicts your future about a month, 2 months ago, and check it out. Again, this is one of those books where it's really hard to just choose one chapter because they're all so rich and applicable. I just love this book, but this was the chapter we felt like would be most useful for those of us in a world of constant change and ever-increasing pace of change. Becoming irrelevant is the natural course most people fall in life, but not for leaders. For example, we all know that grandpa who refers to things like the YouTube or Twitters. Let's not be those people. Let's constantly push to growth and change. This chapter will sincerely help you do just that. What we're going to do today is read the chapter together, and I'll stop two times to further elaborate on a couple of key sections to get you applying this amazing piece of leadership art. So without further ado, let's jump in. Chapter 8, Craving Different, How Regular and Radical Change Keeps You in the Game. Just in case this section of the book feels a little judgmental, please know I'm working hard to keep up too. I have been the victim of a teenage eye roll more than a few times as I tried to do a clean OS install, assemble a new grill, or follow the instruction manual for something new we bought. The inevitable opening phrase was, "Here, Dad," said with a tone of exasperation, accompanied by said eye roll, a deep sigh, and the swing of an arm down to grab the manual tool slash device out of my hand so my boys could perform the task 10 times faster than I could. In their teenage glory, they would look at me like I had my brain removed long before they were born. Both of my sons are in their 20s now, and there's much more grace and even partnership these days, but clearly they are leading me. That was established long ago. So in light of the fact that the next generation will almost always be better, faster, stronger, how do you fight irrelevance? Plain and simple, you keep changing, learning, and evolving. Change stays off irrelevance. I know this sounds simple, but it's not, which is why so many people struggle with change. The older you get, the harder it is to change. If you're young and your native language is current culture, you may be able to navigate the culture and all of its nuances without much thought today, but your 20s gives ways to your 30s, then your 40s and beyond. The culture keeps changing. The question becomes, do you? The barrier to change, of course, is that anything that deviates from your default, your normal, will feel unfamiliar, challenging, and sometimes even threatening. In every decade, the gap grows between where culture has gone and what you're hardwired to view as normal. It's not that hard to feel like a stranger in the world you live in. Consequently, change is the only thing that bridges the gap between who you are and who you need to be. Change keeps your job skills fresh and your language up to date. It keeps you connected to your kids and eventually grandkids. Well, comes the pushback, what about timeless values and things that never change? That's a great question. Theologically, God never changes, and for sure, God's values are timeless. But your willingness to change gives you the ability to communicate timeless truths in a way that has meaning to those who come after you. If you want to influence the next generation, or the current one, change is your friend. If you stubbornly cling to outdated methods, soon you will find yourself selling Kodak film after photography has gone digital, or hawking DVDs after movies have gone online. If you're not careful, you'll be the last one to figure out why your approach and skills are not resonating. All of this probably makes sense to you, but still, many people resist change. So now, for the deeper question, exactly why is change so hard for so many? Here's why people don't change. Change is difficult because you and I are hardwired to resist it. To test that, play along with this scenario. Let's say you know that the all-season tires on your car need to be changed. Yet if you're like most of us, you're inclined to get as much wear and tear out of them as you can. After all, getting 4 new tires put on a vehicle is a pain. First, it's expensive. A good set of tires is going to cost you a big chunk of money. Second, it's a hassle. You might need to leave the car at the shop for the day, catch a ride to work with a friend on the bus or through Uber. You might need to sit in the waiting room for a few hours, mindlessly scrolling your phone or growing mildly bored, watching some daytime show playing on the service lounge TV. No wonder people put off decisions like getting their tires changed. But let's say that tonight you head out on an errand, your current set of tires still on the vehicle. It's raining, and as you make your way onto the freeway, you notice a sea of red taillights ahead of you. Traffic comes to an abrupt halt, and you jam on the brakes to avoid rear-ending the car ahead of you. Suddenly, your car starts to swerve out of control. You do a complete 360, almost hitting several vehicles around you before you come within inches of the center median. A few seconds later, your car comes to a full stop with other drivers honking and gesturing in no uncertain terms what they think of you. Once you come to your senses, you look around. Much to your surprise, you realize you haven't hit anything. You're actually fine. Miraculously, you escaped doing even minimal damage. Your car and you are 100% intact. So you slowly take your foot off the brake and head to your destination unharmed. Question: what are you going to do the first thing tomorrow morning? Exactly. Get new tires for your vehicle. Why? Here's why. You're ready to change because the pain associated with the status quo just became greater than the pain associated with the change. That's the moment most of us change. It's why you know you should eat a little less and start exercising, but you don't do it until the doctor tells you that you're headed for diabetes or a heart attack or both. Suddenly, getting up at 6 in the morning to run 3 times a week and passing on the dessert buffet is no longer that difficult. It's why you think your attitude is no big deal until your wife tells you she's so frustrated that she's thinking of leaving you. Finally, you begin to watch the way you talk to her and treat her. Change is painful, and that's why the vast majority of us resist it. That's why it's easier to use the sales tactics that worked when you started, even though the market has changed dramatically. That's why it's tempting to just stick with the management philosophy you learned when you graduated, even though your style rubs younger workers the wrong way. That's why you skip workshops and seminars that will teach you new strategies. You figure the old methods are tried and true. All right, this is a great point to stop. We're going to take a second away from the book. Carrie Newhoff says, that's why it's tempting to just stick with the management philosophy you learned when you graduated, even though your style rubs young workers the wrong way. That's why you skip old workshops and seminars that will teach you new strategies. You figure the old methods are tried and true. This is a great point. What's the area of change you resist in your life the most? I know I have many. One that recently comes to mind is investing. I didn't come from a family that majored in investing for the long term or talked about investing much at all, so I knew nothing about it growing up. So when I first began my career, that's exactly what I did. Nothing. I had friends talking about investing, but I remember telling myself, that's for them, I'll figure it out later, because that's, well, what my family did. Then I had a friend challenge me to start saving more of my income, but it was painful. Seeing the money go into an account every month instead of towards purchases I really wanted was painful, but it became my new norm over time. It didn't hurt quite as bad. I settled into that lifestyle. And then I read a book and it challenged me to go even further and do some simple investing. It's called The Simple Path to Wealth. We talked about it a while back. You should definitely check it out. It's called The Book That Actually Makes You Rich. Highly, highly recommend it. And at first, I was like, that's a great strategy for him, but I don't want to do that because it sounds a little bit painful. So I decided to ignore it. Then I had a friend challenge me to do it, and I'm so glad he did. It was painful to see that money go from something that it was just sitting in that I could access at any time to something that then I was locked in and I couldn't just sell at any time I wanted. But then it became my new norm. It became less painful. That process has continued for the last 5 years, and I'm always being challenged to continually be getting better at investing. I'm faced with a painful decision to grow and embrace a new idea. I do it, and then I realize I'm better for it. Again, which area do you resist the idea to change the most because of the pain? That's probably the area you need to press into as soon as possible. Get some outside advice on it. My philosophy is that as long as I'm changing and growing, it's always good. Yes, there is always pain in the change, but you and the people you lead will be better for it. Embrace the pain. Okay, back to the chapter. The dynamics of change. I've spent most of my life working among groups of people who resist change. If you want to talk to people who understand resistance to change, hang out with church leaders for a while. For some reason, North American Christians tend to cling to the past more than they want to leap into the future. The decline of both faith and church attendance during the previous decades has been significant, and the relevance of the church to the culture has suffered as well. In my view, there's a direct correlation between the two phenomena. Yet often Christians believe that since God doesn't change, we don't need to either. I've committed my life to reversing that belief. After all, irrelevance causes us to lose the ability to speak into a culture. There's never been a more important time for the church to have a voice, yet we're at the point of losing ours. The church may be a prime example of resistance to change, but it's certainly not the only one. In your lifetime, you've seen whole industries change, titans fall, and once innovative organizations go under. By contrast, a fair number of the largest and fastest growing companies today didn't even exist 30 years ago. I'm fascinated by why some people in organizations change and others don't. Think about the massive companies and brands that no longer exist or are a shadow of what they used to be. Kodak, Blockbuster, Polaroid, Compaq Computers, Borders, Nokia, Pontiac, and Oldsmobile, just to name a few. Take Kodak. Case studies show that there was a bitter war inside Kodak between the digital division and the print division. The top executives were fixated on getting people to print their digital photos. The digital division said people didn't care. And yet it's not like Kodak was thinking about digital at all. They just missed its significance. There's more than a little irony in the fact that in 2000, Kodak also launched an early photo upload website, OPhoto. But as Harvard Business Review notes, instead of making it a place to share pictures, they dedicated the site to getting people to print their pictures. Essentially, they leveraged new technology to prop up an old model, a strategy that ultimately helped do them in. In many ways, that's what churches and companies are doing today. We're using new technology to prop up an old model. What if leaders start thinking of themselves as a digital organization with a physical presence, instead of a physical organization with a digital presence? After all, everyone they want to reach is already online. Imagine what might have happened if a decade or so before Kodak folded, Kodak asked itself, are we in the film business or the photography business? Had they been in the photography business, they might still be the iconic company they used to be. The ultimate irony is that Kodak actually invented digital photography. They came out with the first digital camera. You would expect a brand synonymous with photography that invented the digital camera to thrive. Instead, it went bankrupt in 2012. Ultimately, you know who killed Kodak? It wasn't another digital photography company. It was Instagram. When the game changes that massively, those who refuse to change die. The newspaper business is another industry rocked to the core by the digital age. One of the most important questions newspaper executives can ask as they watch everything change before their eyes is this: Are we in the newspaper business or the news business? But what seems obvious to outsiders is rarely that obvious to insiders, which is why you and I struggle badly with change. So that you can see what most of us miss, here are three principles that will help you understand why you resist the change you need to make to stay relevant. Number one, you aren't opposed to change, just change you didn't think of. Change happens in two ways. It is externally imposed or internally driven. Internally driven change is easier to deal with by far. It's change you devised. It's you deciding to write a book, take a course on leadership, change your office hours, or develop new friendships. You're already a fan of it. Will you ever feel resistance to internally driven change? Sure, but not nearly as intensely as the resistance you feel to externally imposed change. When someone else decides you need to be in the office by 8 a.m. every day, it's completely different than when you decide to arrive at that time. The challenge with the cultural and social changes that cause you to become irrelevant is that they're all externally imposed changes. That kind of change is beyond your control, so you naturally try to do the only thing you can do to exert control over it. Ignore it, resist it, or fight it. Number two, you crave what you already like. Think about your appetite. You probably don't crave foods you haven't tried, do you? That's because it's virtually impossible to crave something you haven't sampled, smelled, or experienced. You don't even have a category for it because your brain struggles to categorize the unknown. As a result, when it comes to your eating habits, you have a built-in bias to eat more of your favorite go-to food options. Your work patterns, life habits, decorating tastes, and other preferences all operate the same way. You've cultivated a set of effective strategies, approaches, and routines at work. It's natural to want to repeat and refine what's already proven successful. As a result, new methods often don't look as appealing as the system you've carefully developed and utilized. Your tastes and preferences also behave this way. You're far more likely to put your favorite playlist on repeat than you are to endlessly cycle through the music you've never heard before. My wife tells me that when I go shirt shopping, I just buy more of what I already own. And I guess the fact that I have 8 checked shirts hanging together in the closet proves she has a point. Because you crave what you already like, your life is liable to keep repeating your established preferences. The brain has a bias toward what it already knows. Number three, you encounter problems with success. Usually you become successful because you've embraced change. You found some competitive advantage and retooled it. You started something or were the first to market. That's often how organizations and leaders flourish. But once they achieve a measure of success, a whole other dynamic kicks in. Surprisingly, success makes you conservative. The more successful you are, the less likely you are to change. When you were starting out, had almost no money and hadn't accomplished much, what did you have to lose? Pretty much nothing. This is exactly why it was easy to take risks and forge ahead. Since you had little, almost any tiny step forward looked like big progress. When success comes, you suddenly have something to preserve and conserve. Whether that's your net worth, your strategy and tactics, or your practices and habits, there's even your reputation to think about. As a result, you're far less open to change because you don't want to mess with a good thing. You want to stick with the tactics that got you this far. This is exactly how successful organizations become irrelevant. At one point, department stores were the biggest retailers in the world. Now, most are in steep decline. Rather than adapt, many executives couldn't imagine a world in which consumers wouldn't want to one-stop shop in a physical store. Their highly profitable model worked so well for so long they resisted change, until the internet changed everything. Now Amazon and its ilk are the places for one-stop shopping. Success often causes those once bold and brazen to become complacent and even fearful. What's true for corporations and organizations is also true for individuals. Things are working so well, why vary the formula? Don't rock the boat, just stay the course. This is the danger point most successful people and organizations never see coming. That's why the greatest enemy of your future success is always your current success. What does change look like? If the antidote to irrelevance is change, what does change look like? How can you tell whether you're in a place to keep innovating, growing, and moving forward? In addition to being aware of why you're biased against change, which we've just seen, here are 4 insights and strategies to help you make sure you stay current. Number one, love the mission more than the methods. If you think about your life, most of what you do can be divided into 2 categories, missions and methods. The mission is big. It's about what you want to accomplish. Methods are smaller and should be subservient to the mission. Your methods are what help you achieve your mission. I am privileged to host a fairly popular leadership podcast. Leaders seem to appreciate it, and the growth curve of the show has been phenomenal. As a result, people often ask me, so will you always podcast? My answer? No, I don't think so. Why? Because podcasting is the method, not the mission. My mission is to help people thrive in life and leadership. Podcasting is currently a very effective method for helping and teaching people. But I'm sure the day will come when people will take out their earbuds and something else will become even more effective. On that day, or hopefully long before that day comes, I'll ditch podcasting and embrace whatever new method will allow me to help people thrive. To be successful in life, methods need to serve your mission. This principle shows up everywhere. A few years ago, Tony and I became empty nesters. What's that like, you ask? Honestly, it's amazing. It's like date night every single night. We love our kids. When they lived at home, connecting with them was incredibly easy. We dinner together almost every night and hung out all the time. Now that they've moved out of the house, naturally it's more challenging. We've had to change our methods to accomplish our mission. We have flown to the East Coast to visit one son while he studied there. We regularly drive to Toronto to visit our older son. We set aside weekends to be together, and we got a boat to create more shared activities. Missions and methods often work in harmony, serving hand in hand, but just as often, you'll see the two competing. If you're missing the goals you have for your mission, change your methods. The challenge, of course, is that far too many people love their methods more than they love their mission. It would be like Tony and me cooking dinner for four every night and wondering why our kids never show up, or like me deciding to podcast long after people stopped listening. At work and in life, your methods should be constantly changing so you can better accomplish your mission financially, relationally, spiritually, physically, and in every other facet. Otherwise, you become Kodak. If the methods are more important than the mission, you die. Number two, get radical. We live in an era of radical cultural change, most of which we didn't create and don't control. So we might be tempted to slow down a bit, to think that the change required is not as drastic as others would suggest it is, to try to find some middle ground. I get that. When it comes to staying healthy, for instance, I always try to convince myself I can do the minimum amount of exercise that will allow me to eat the maximum amount of meat. But you and I both know that when it comes to fitness, you reap what you sow. The benefits are commensurate to the effort you put in. That's the problem with minimal effort. Incremental change brings about incremental results. Furthermore, incrementalism inspires no one. Radical change brings about radical results. If you are in a rapidly changing world, small amounts of personal incremental change are likely not enough. All right, let's step out of the book for a second and just break down this point. This has to be one of Carrie's best points in this chapter. This is a beautiful line from Carrie, and so true. We'll be back in 1 second to talk about how we can use radical change to inspire and grow. All right, so Carrie says this. He says, that's the problem with minimal effort. Incremental change brings about incremental results. Furthermore, incrementalism inspires no one. Radical change brings about radical results. If you're in a rapidly changing world, small amounts of personal incremental change are likely not enough. So Carrie's saying incremental change brings about incremental results. Radical change brings about radical results. I personally want to be someone who embraces radical change. Whether right or wrong, I like being the person who surprises people with the change in my life. For example, let's continue with the investing example I shared earlier. For the longest time, I wanted to invest in real estate. My plan was to incrementally save up to buy one house outright over a long period of time. And then once I had that house, start saving up more. That's incremental change. But after reading multiple books, listening to webinars, and talking to many trusted mentors in this area, I soon found out that if you want real results in real estate, you need to take a bigger dive. So after facing the pain of avoiding the incremental change and going for something radical, we recently just put down a contract on 11 properties in a week. That's radical change. And I like radical change. It's a tool to cling to in your leadership belt for sure, and you really need to have it on hand. I'm a firm believer that small changes over time have big impacts in one's life, maybe even bigger than the radical changes. But where appropriate and where you're looking for bigger results, you need some radical change. Maybe for you, it's your diet. Don't just try cutting out the fries. Try going vegan for a spell. That sounds crazy, but I guarantee you'll get radical results, whether good or bad. Or what if you're trying to read more? Instead of reading 4 more books this year, go for 40. Here's the truth. Radical change brings some risk, definitely, but there's also high reward. And I find the best leaders use incremental change and radical change in tandem, like an orchestra. Pick one area of your life you'd like to get radical results in today and try to make a radical change. Worst case scenario, you grow a lot along the way. All right, Let's get back to the book. Number three, become a student of culture. Regardless of your personal preferences, and even if you don't like today's culture, you can still be a student of it. Honestly, I have to work harder at this with each passing year. My personal musical tastes don't stay as current or mainstream as they did a few decades ago, and I have generally lost interest in movies and even TV compared to when I was younger. So every month, I'll go online and listen to a current top 40 playlist to hear what is popular at the moment. I'll check out what movies people are watching and download one from time to time. I'll also check out entertainment websites and follow some celebrities on social media just to stay up to date. Why should you become a student of culture? Simple. People who don't understand today's culture will never be able to speak into it. Whether you agree with culture or not, understanding it is a prerequisite to being able to influence it. Number four, surround yourself with younger people. Another way to make sure you stay relevant is to have younger people in your life. If you're a parent, don't just hang out with your kids. Explore their world and take a keen interest in it. Try to understand them rather than just criticize them. Similarly, at work, whenever you build a team, make sure you invite and include young adults into the mix. One of the most refreshing things about the teams I've led is that they've always had younger leaders on board, sometimes very young leaders. The temptation is to want to teach them everything you've learned. And that's great when you can do it in ways that's welcomed by them. But one of the best ways to earn the affection and buy-in of a younger team is to listen as much as you speak, to learn as much as you attempt to teach. You can learn so much from younger leaders, and they hold the key to your organization's renewal and future in terms of both personnel and ideas. The gift of aging well. What do you do with all your accumulated life experience? It's true that you can be wise at any age, but there's something about reaching age 40 that allows wisdom to blossom if you nurture it well. I still have much to learn, but when I entered my 40s, it was like new sequences started firing my brain, aligning insights in a way that suddenly began to make sense of things previously mysterious to me. I began to see patterns in people's lives and in their character that I hadn't seen before. Life started to seem a lot less random and haphazard. That's one of the benefits of getting older. You see things you just couldn't see at age 20. My 40s were the decade when I started writing more widely, building into my team and outside leaders, and guiding young leaders as they entered the workforce. It's the decade I was able to apply much of what I'd learned to my teachings at our church and to my own life. Accumulated life experiences and insight give a refreshing new depth to my reading of Scripture. The Christian Scriptures have always rung true to me, but in my 40s, I really began to realize why they rang true. The best years for leaders who are able to communicate with the culture often seem to happen somewhere between age 45 and 75. If you don't navigate these years well, these are also the years where irrelevance accelerates. But if you pay attention to the things we've discussed, these can be not only your peak earning years, but also your peak contributing years. That's what relevance allows you to do. Earlier, I mentioned author and scholar Dallas Willard, who died in 2013 at age 75. He contributed as much in his last two decades as in his first five decades. When Dr. Willard passed away, I was saddened because he was a voice I wanted to hear from for years to come. So many people do their best work and craft their greatest contributions later in life. They give a lifetime of knowledge, insight, and wisdom back to the culture. Instead of railing against the way things are, they leverage the past and present to make the future better. Think about it. You have older people, authors, actors, artists, musicians, friends, family you adore. And you're not worried about their age. They've bridged the communication gap between the generation and yours, between their preferred culture and today's culture. In fact, their stage of life might be the very reason they had so much value to so many people. Their years offer wisdom that youth simply can't access. Growing older does not necessarily mean growing irrelevant. In fact, staying relevant to the culture around you may be the gateway into your best years yet. Get ready for a surprise. Transformation. You know that change isn't easy at all, and there's something deep inside you that will keep resisting it. That's understandable, but what happens when you resist the status quo, embrace radical ideas and approaches, study the culture, and surround yourself with younger people? Change becomes familiar. It becomes a way of life. At first, change feels strange, difficult, and foreign. And to some extent, those feelings never go away. But something profound happens if you stick with change and decide you're not going to stop evolving. Eventually, change becomes transformation. It won't happen right away, but after a number of years, most frequently between 5 and 7, you'll realize that you've been transformed. You're no longer who you were. The difference between change and transformation is powerful. On the outside, they look similar. Looking at a person who's changed versus one who's transformed, you won't see a big external difference. But inside, the transformed person is significantly different. But what happened? The transformed person no longer wants to go back to the way things were. Unlike the story of Moses and the Israelites, the slaves no longer want to go back to Egypt. When true transformation occurs, the person embraces the future more than the past. The key to seeing transformation take root is to keep changing, keep experimenting, keep risking. You won't feel the shift immediately, but at some point, you'll wake up and realize you don't want things to be the way they used to be. You'll begin to feel that the good old days should be left behind and that your best days are ahead of you. And that ushers in hope, excitement, and joy. Unimplemented change becomes regret. A final thought on this topic. The change you don't implement often becomes something none of us wants, regret. People who fail to undertake change usually look back and yearn for what might have been. You probably already have a few of these examples in your life. The job you could have taken but waited too long to decide on, regret. The girl you should have asked out but never found the nerve to chat with, regret. The stock you knew you should have bought but didn't, regret. That apology you should have made to your dad before he died, deep regret. Change is hard, but the right kind ushers in so much good. You may prefer to do things your way and keep everything the same, but for the sake of the next generation, for the sake of contributing meaningfully throughout your entire life, don't just intend to change. Actually do it, because unimplemented change will become regret. I mean, what an incredible chapter. That's such good stuff. Carrie Newhoff is an expert at staying relevant. The man is well into his late 50s, early 60s. I'm probably offending him with that. He's probably 40-something. Carrie, I still think you look good. But he's still producing some of the best leadership content for the next generation. I told a friend the other day, I want to reinvent myself every 5 years. What I don't mean is to just let loose and try to reinvent my image. That's not deep. That's not helpful. What I do mean is that in the next 5 years, I want people to look at me and think, wow, he's different. Something has changed in a really positive way. I hope you'll join me on that mission. If this chapter was interesting to you, please pick up the book. If you're looking for the link, please click our show notes. If you buy the book from the link in our show notes, we'll get a portion of the proceeds at no extra cost to you so we can keep bringing you the best content possible. That's the end of our series, Your Next Chapter. And for the next couple of weeks, we're going to get back to what we did doing book reveals, but also, like I mentioned in the spring update, we're going to be mixing in chapters in between so that you guys get an awesome book with some incredible application in between every single time. We want to maximize and accelerate your leadership growth, and we feel like that's the way to do it. So we're really excited about this new direction we're going. This is your host, Jake Welchins, and remember, life's too short for bad books. If you know someone out there who'd benefit from today's episode, please share it. Let's build this thing together. I need your help. To connect or see what I'm reading right now, follow me on my Instagram at Jake Welchins or my Goodreads profile at www.goodreads.com/Jake Welchins. This podcast is brought to you by the Launchpad Podcast Collection and performed and written by myself, Jake Welchins. Podcast production by the one and only Logan Bongean. See you next time on Read Out.